join me in Acts chapter 9, if you will. Acts chapter 9. And I want to begin with just one verse, verse 31. Acts 9, 31. Listen to this. Luke writes, "So the church throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria enjoyed peace, being built up, going on in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Spirit. It continued to increase." I like that little picture that Luke paints for us. Progress of these early disciples. It's really a loaded verse, a lot there to consider. But the point is that the early work of God's people was going well. It is a picture, I think we can agree, on the work of God, the people of God, as he intended, doing what it is that he wants us to do. I love that little picture. It stands for me in sharp contrast to an experience I had as a young preacher when I was just starting out. I was invited to come and speak for a group that was close up into one of the big cities here in our country. I was preaching in the suburbs, and this was an older group up in town, and they asked me to come and do some teaching for them. It was a memorable week. I remember driving up for the first night and pulling up in front of what was a large building for that part of the country. I think it would accommodate more than 300 people, and that was in an area where it was odd to have a church with more than 100 people in it. So I was kind of impressed when I pulled up out front. And while I was there that week, one of the elderly ladies shared with me that in years gone by, when they had special events like this, they had filled the place up full. She said, "We'd have so many people, we'd have to put chairs out in the aisle to accommodate the crowd." There wasn't a crowd like that the week I was there. I know what you guys are thinking. You're thinking, well, that might have something to do with the kid that was coming to preach this week. Maybe, but the truth is, wasn't anybody left. In fact, that week, there were about 20 of them. They all sat on one side in two rows. That was it. I got there early on one of the other nights. In fact, traffic wasn't as bad as I anticipated. I did grow up in Houston. And so I was the first one to get there, and right behind me, the guy whose job it was to open the building. So he opened it up and let me in, and I started wandering around, looking around. I'm a little nosy. And so there was this one hallway I had not been down yet, and it led to a large classroom wing. So I just kind of walked down the hallway, killing some time and peeking in the doors. I guess in years gone by, this is where they had their children's Bible class. But not anymore. I mean, there weren't any children's Bible classes because there weren't any children at all. The group that sat down front in those two rows, they were all elderly people. And the rooms where they used to have Bible classes, well, you know, when you peeked in the door, they just become sort of dusty storage closets where you put stuff that you don't know what to do with, because you know if you bought it with the Lord's money, you can never throw it away again, right? And that's what they had done, just piled up the room with all this stuff. What had happened is over the decades, this once thriving congregation had just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled until that was all that was left. Just some elderly folks struggling to keep the doors open. And even as a young, inexperienced guy, I kind of looked at that going away at the end of the week and sadly said to myself, I don't think they're going to make it.
They did last longer than I anticipated. But they didn't last. And so there came a day a few years back when somebody turned off the lights and took the keys and locked up that building for the last time. There is no longer a congregation there. That's kind of sad, isn't it? So here's the thing that I think me and you need to be honest about. It is sad, brothers and sisters. It is not unusual. And we need to be honest about that, and we need to talk about that. I suspect that, like me, some of you have seen this in your experiences. I travel every year. I probably see a half a dozen or more different congregations every single year. And I see this. Do you? Churches that are declining and dying. I will tell you that if I was compelled to be completely honest about this, I would have to say it is a strange thing to encounter a group that's thriving. And when I say that, what I mean is a group that is generally upbeat and on fire about what they're doing for the Lord and get out of the community and spreading the gospel and reaching people, and the numbers as a result of that are going up. I sometimes go to places like that, and the conversation on the way home in the car with Heidi is, was it that refreshing and different? Because it is not usual. Sometimes you just don't know. Maybe a church kind of seems to be holding its own. I think that's an illusion sometimes. Because decline isn't always rapid. I think more often than not, it's slow. And I think there are a whole lot more churches today that are just slowly in the same process of that church I described at the beginning. They're just gradually, year by year and decade by decade, getting smaller and smaller and older and older. And when I say things like that, you know, there are people who get unhappy with me and they say things like, David, it isn't about the numbers. And then people say things like, you know, we may not be growing numerically, but we're growing spiritually. And I think we probably ought to look into that a little bit more than we do. I think that's a slogan we throw around. But I will tell you this, brothers and sisters, don't frown on the number. The Holy Spirit cares about the numbers. Look how much he talks about numbers in the book of Acts. Because numbers are people. They're souls. And I'm going to tell you, when the number gets to zero, and there's no one next week to unlock the doors, it becomes about the numbers suddenly. But those who study this more formally than my collection of experiences tell us that it is a trend that's happening across the country and in religion generally. And so Gallup found between 1998 and 2018, church membership declined by 20%. You see it? Just going down. And if Jeff and I were up here together right now doing text talk, at this point, he would probably weigh in and say, I hope he's streaming this morning. Jeff is sick today. So see, I'm getting in, buddy, even when you're not here. Jeff would say that it is symptomatic of the broader decline of religion generally in culture. I think he would say that, and I think he would be right about that. I think that is part of the problem, too. And if I'm sitting where you're sitting this morning, I'm thinking, wow, this sounds really dark. And I don't want it to be. And that's not where I'm headed today. I do believe, brothers and sisters, we can't afford to be naive about this and pretend like that all around us churches aren't declining. They are. I think we need to see that. And more importantly, we need to answer this question. We need to ask, okay, so why is that happening? Why do churches die like the one I described at the beginning? And when we know why it's going on, then the question is, well, what do we do about that? And that's really where I want to go this morning. I want to shine a little light on the problem. That's a dark problem. But folks, it's not as though we are subject here to forces beyond our ability to manage. It's not like we can't do anything about this. We need to know what's going on so we can react to these factors that contribute to decline. I would remind you, brothers and sisters, that the people of God have thrived at really, really difficult times. When we start talking about how tough it is in our culture, we probably need to go back and read Acts a little more. In those dark and difficult days for God's people, churches were thriving and growing and doing well, Acts 9:31, as it was intended to be. So it isn't about things beyond our control. Churches die because of what we do or don't do. And that's where I'd like to focus our attention this morning. Why do churches die? And if there are reasons on our watch, what can we do about those things? I don't know where Kleinwood will be in 50 years. I'm optimistic about the future. I don't think I'll live to be 108, okay? But I'm here now, and so are all of us. So the question this morning is, what do we do on our watch and our time to thrive? So let me give you three words. I know you are stunned to see me do that, right? And we'll build a couple of thoughts around these three words to help us understand why churches die and what we can do about it. The first word I want to give you is the word community. And here's where I'm going with that. Churches thrive as they are reaching lost people in their community. Read Acts. That's why the church was thriving in the New Testament. By contrast, when churches don't do that work, churches die. And so I put this first on the list because it is number one on the list. It is the most important of all the things we'll talk about today. The key to a church thriving is the people who make up that group, me and you, going out into our circle of friends, looking for people who are searching and trying to find Jesus, beginning those awkward first conversations, having Bible studies, and helping people along the way as they make their journey to Jesus. If we are not doing that kind of work, if that is not part of the spiritual DNA of our family, start the clock. Because we're counting down to that moment when someone will turn off the lights and lock up this building for the last time. Now, I really want to be emphatic about this because I think there is a danger of deceiving ourselves about this reality. And the reason I say that is because sometimes churches can appear to be growing and thriving when they're not. Let me illustrate that. I've spent a good bit of my time as a preacher riding along right along the Texas Gulf Coast. And so one of the things we've learned in this part of the country is that when the oil industry is doing well, everybody's doing well, right? And that means, for example, that people wind up coming down our way looking for jobs. When things are good in the oil industry, people come here looking for jobs. And mixed in that crowd sometimes are Christians from other places, right? And they wind up joining in with us along the way. Maybe that's why some of you are here right now. 20 years ago, your job brought you to Houston, Texas to work, and you came here. You became part of the Kleinwood family. And maybe you brought kids with you. Sometimes that happens too. When the economy is good, people move to an area, they join churches, they bring their kids, and the classes start filling up, and all of a sudden you got 32-year-olds. God bless you women who teach that class. Wow. And then we pile everyone in the auditorium and the empty seats are getting fewer and fewer. And when we sing, it just kind of raises up the roof. And people look at all of that and they say, wow, we're really growing here. This group is really thriving. Do you realize that all of those things could be happening when we're not thriving at all? When the fundamental mission of God's people is actually being neglected? Do you remember what Jesus asked us to do when he left? Mark 16 and verse 15. Go preach the gospel to every creature. Matthew 28 and verse 19. go make disciples of all the nations. When the Lord left, he said to all of us, go share this message with everyone. And the early disciples got that. They understood. In fact, in Acts chapter 8 and verse 4, even after they start killing people for preaching the gospel, guess what? They scattered and they just kept on sharing the good news. If we don't do that, that neglect is going to catch up to us because while the economy gives, the economy also takes away, right? And churches that live by the economy are one day going to die by the economy because the industries that being the job have downturns and all, and we know about that too, right? Y'all remember the 80s. Some y'all don't remember the 80s, but some of us remember the 80s, right? Church where I preached for many years over in Beaumont lost 100 people over about 2 years at one point in the 80s. 100 people. Think about that. And it wasn't like someone got mad and moved off. I mean, it was like there weren't jobs anymore and they had to go somewhere else. If you live by the economy, brothers and sisters, you will one day die by the economy. Let me be clear that it is a blessing to have disciples who live in other places to move here and join our efforts. But let's also be clear, brothers and sisters, that that is not kingdom growth. Are you with me on that? That's moving sheep around. Kingdom growth takes place when people are transferred, this is Paul to the Colossians, transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of his beloved Son. It's when the Lord is adding to our number day by day those who are being saved, not those who are being transferred, right? That kind of growth is the lifeblood of a church. I tell you what, folks, when we're thriving because we're teaching the gospel, it doesn't matter what happens to the economy. Let the jobs change. Let some of our folks go somewhere else. That just means they get to be a blessing to another church. We're gonna keep clicking right along because it's rooted. Our work is rooted in sharing the gospel with other people. But when we don't do that, well, the economy may prop us up for a while, but it won't last. And the clock is counting down. So here's my question. Can you find something in all of that for us to do? I think, brothers and sisters, the work of teaching lost people just needs to consume us. As a church family, it needs to be part of our family DNA, part of our culture, what we're focused on, what we talk about, what we're doing all the time. We need to be busy out there in our community, reaching out to the people who don't know Jesus. It needs to work its way into our teaching all the time. For those of us who preach, we need to be talking about it all the time. If you're out there working in our Bible class program, talk about it all the time. You ladies working with our little children, start planting those seeds in the minds of the kids about their friends who are lost so that that will blossom into powerful, powerful work in the future as they grow in their faith. We need to work to understand our culture better so that we'll do a better job reaching people today. People are not where we think they are. Culture is changing. We need to understand that better so we can reach people. We need to be equipped to do this work really, really well. I think there are some things we can do as a church family to encourage the work of evangelism. But here's the thing I really want to press hard this morning. The work of evangelism, brothers and sisters, is not largely a congregational work. It's an individual work. It's me and you going out tomorrow, connecting with people that don't know Jesus in our circle of friends, having that first awkward conversation, extending an invitation, having a Bible study, and helping people find their way to Jesus. There is something for us to do. Our future is not subject to forces beyond our control. If we want our group to thrive for years to come on our watch, that's what it is. We've got to be reaching our community. If we don't do that, this church will die. We're on the clock. Man, I could talk about that all day. You're thinking you still got three more points, and I do. Because this work is not the only impact. They think that impacts what happens in our future. Let me give you a second word, and let's build some thoughts around children, okay? Why do I put children on the list? For this reason. This has happened to me a couple of times that I have found myself in a place where it's clearly decline is taking place, the numbers are small, the auditorium is empty, and it's just a few older people left. And inevitably, somebody will come up and say this to me. I've heard this over and over again. People will say, if we had half the kids that grew up here, this building would be full. Ever heard somebody say that? If we had half the kids that grew up here, our building would be full. Which in my mind immediately stirs a question. Well, okay, so where are the kids? And that's a complicated question to answer because a lot of things happen to the kids. Sometimes kids grow up and they move off, right? We send our girls over here to College Station, and they meet these beat-up boys and fall in love with them, and then they get married. The boys just take them off somewhere. What's that about? Your mamas and daddies need to be getting some kind of contract to get them back here at Kleinwood, but you know, that happens sometimes, right? Or our boys move off, and they take jobs in other places. But you know I'm whistling past the graveyard right now. Because that happens with some kids. That isn't what's happening with most of the kids, and we know that. In an awful lot of places, in churches all over this country today, young people are growing up, and they're leaving home, and they're leaving Jesus. I don't know what the numbers are for our collection of brothers and sisters. I don't know of anybody that's ever taken the time to do a formal study among us of that. I do know that we've lost a lot of kids I grew up with. And I've been teaching children's Bible classes for 35 years, and I know a lot of the kids that I've had in class are not with us anymore. And I know if you look at the broader religious world, it is a disturbingly high number. There have been formal studies that have done, how many kids churches are losing today. And I can just tell you, the numbers are way beyond 50%. I've seen them as high as 70 or 80% of kids who grew up in a given denomination by the time they're in their 20s will no longer be attending. So think about that. Take the two words on the slide and put them together. We're not gaining by reaching our community, but we are losing because our kids are walking away and in extraordinarily high numbers. And do you see how now we're accelerating the problem of decline? So, do you hear something in that? Is there something we can do? I would suggest, brothers and sisters, that as a church family, one of the most important responsibilities we have is to take care of our kids, to take care of the kids that grow up here. I think it needs to be among the very top priorities for every church family. They are, after all, the most at-risk group among us. How many times have I heard me say that? Are y'all tired of me saying that yet? Please don't get tired of it, because I'm going to say it over and over again. If most of the people that we will lose over the next 20 years will be people under the age of 30. Okay? And so because that is true, that needs special attention. That needs critical care. And how much stuff does that involve? So many things. Great Bible classes. Listen, children's Bible classes ought to be just one of the most important things that we invest ourselves in. So let me pause and say thank you to all the dedicated teachers in this church who do such an amazing job working in the classes. I wanted to make this point this morning so I could thank you and say to you, your work is so vital. We need rock-solid classes that are helping stir up our kids and causing them to love the Word and want to know it more and develop a rock-solid spiritual foundation. We need to be looking for ways to get our kids involved in this thing we do together in meaningful ways, so much more than just coming and filling a pew, right? Involved in meaningful ways, like this thing that's going on at 4:30 today when our young men are going to lead us in devotion, and they do that in part as an exercise to begin to prepare them to lead worship. You guys have been so great about supporting that. So whoever's making the closing announcements, I just covered that for you, right? 4:30 today, we need you back to support these boys, because I got to tell you, that's a vital work that we're doing. And this salt shaker things that are going on with our young ladies, I got to tell you, folks, a lot of young girls grow up in the church, and they think there ain't anything for girls to do in the church. Boy, have we dropped the ball on that. And I appreciate folks who are dedicating themselves to showing young ladies about the vital role that they have to play in the kingdom of God and getting them involved. And there'll be a devotion for the high school kids tonight. Dale is hosting that at his house. All that stuff matters. Now, can I say something about that? Did y'all wear your steel-toed shoes this morning? Because this will be a little edgy, but I warned you it was coming, right? This is a great crowd this morning. And it will not look like this tonight. Because some of y'all regularly don't come back. And if you got kids, that means your kids do not come back for Bible class. And won't be at that Devo. We need you to bring your kids back. You need to be here too. But we need you to bring your kids back. Your kids need to be in Bible class. And they need to be with this family. And I've handed out some commendations this morning of things that are done well in this family. That needs to be better. And we can. So, do you hear something for us to do? Listen, we can make a difference with our kids. There are things that we can do. Now, I want to say the same thing about this that I said about evangelism, okay? I do think there are things churches can do to help young people, but at the end of the day, you guys know what that's really about, right? Will you grab your Bible and go over to Deuteronomy? I think I told you all a while back that anytime I talk about parenting, I'm going to end up in Deuteronomy 6. I just love this text. So I want to read it again. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 4. The thing I want to say is while the church can help some, this is really about the home, right? So Deuteronomy 6 and 4, as Moses is thinking about future generations of Israelites serving the Lord, in verse 4 he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house. And when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, you shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Isn't that a beautiful picture of what needs to be happening at home? That's the atmosphere, brothers and sisters, that our kids need to grow up in. It needs to be happening at home. It needs to be happening at home because there is nothing more important than your kid going to heaven. But the thing I'm trying to say this morning is that the implications of that extend beyond just your kid and your family. This is building a future for the church family, future workers, future laborers. Churches that take care of their kids thrive. Churches that lose their kids die. Not on our watch. Not in our time. Let me give you a last word. And I'll just spend a little bit of time here. But it's important to add this to the equation. I want to give you the word family. And here's where I'm going with that. When I talk about family, I'm thinking about this family. I'm thinking about this church family. I think the more and more church feels like family, the more it thrives. And the more churches turn inwardly and fuss with each other, the more likely they are to decline. It's a connecting thread that I've seen between churches that are declining. They struggle to get along with each other. And what is really distressing about that is so often when you get underneath that and find out what's going on, a lot of the fussing and the fighting in congregations of God's people are over stuff that is of no consequence. So I've been trying to remember all week if I've told you guys about the ceiling fans. I tell stories. I forget where I tell them. I'm almost 60. I just can't keep track anymore. Would y'all play along if y'all heard this story before? Pretend like you've not. I was having lunch with a guy one day. I was holding a meeting with the church where he was the preacher, and he was telling me about this big blow up they just had in their church family. They'd had a big blow up over ceiling fans. And that's just how he said it. And I didn't press. I really didn't want to know any more than that. But I'm thinking, surely there's something else underneath that. There's bigger stuff, and this is probably just the trigger. And I think that was probably so. But that was the thing that just kind of blew things up. Ceiling fans. And I didn't say this, but in my brain, I'm thinking, couldn't you fix that with a blanket? Right? I'll buy the blanket. But it happens like that. And I got to tell you, that kind of senseless squabbling, brothers and sisters, is debilitating. I'm thinking two ladies on the opposite side of the ceiling fan controversy are probably not going to teach the third graders together, right? And then everybody else has to kind of watch that mess. Isn't it discouraging to be part of a family that is at war with itself? It gets worse sometimes, though. Because with the ceiling fan controversy, there was actually an open rupture. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you get it? The church split over fans. I actually accidentally drove by the building of the other group. I wanted to peek and see if they had fans. I was just curious. Will you think about what you're left with in a case like that? Two groups of broken, angry people. Discouraged, weaker, smaller, struggling to survive. It makes me think about what we read in Galatians last month. Galatians 5:25, as their struggles, doctrinal struggles in that case, were causing them to turn on themselves. In Galatians 5:25, remember Paul's warning, if you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another. So when you group all this together, think about those three words. No new blood from work in the community reaching lost people. Mass exodus of young people that grow up. And then whatever is left will just destroy with fighting. And suddenly it's not a mystery why churches decline. In fact, we may look at that and say, how does anyone survive that kind of thing, right? So again, can I be real plain with you about something? This kind of senseless squabbling is wicked and sinful. It is contrary to the love that Jesus said should characterize his people. John 13, you love one another just as I loved you. That's the commandment. It's working against the unity Jesus prayed for in John 17 in the shadow of the cross, that they may be one, Father, even as we are one. And it impedes, if it does not just completely halt altogether, the vital work we need to do, going out and rescuing lost people. So here's my question. Can you find something to do wrapped up in all of that? I would suggest, brothers and sisters, it's vital for God's people to work really hard to get along with each other. That is really, really critical. As we're battling a culture increasingly hostile to us, we need to be together. So one of the things that I would help us, think will help us, is to learn that some stuff is just isn't worth fussing over. I think maybe it'd be helpful if we would just sleep on things for a bit and really assess if this is worth going to battle over. And sometimes the answer to that question is yes, there are battles of truth and error that have to be waged. Fans isn't on that list. Buy a blanket. The second thing is I think we need to take a heart to heart the admonition of Paul in Ephesians 4 as he begins that practical part of the letter in verse 3. The language in verse 3 of chapter 4 is being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Being diligent. The idea in the language there is that you work really hard on an ongoing basis to be one. So unity is never this thing that we achieve and we put it on the shelf and say, we got that done, finished. It is a daily struggle and we work at it really hard. One piece of that struggle, I think, is developing our own character. In Ephesians 4 and verse 2, right before he says that, he talks about things like gentleness and patience and love. He's talking about these characteristics we need to put on. Sometimes, folks, our struggles are rooted in our spiritual immaturity. We just don't have grown-up Christ-like character. It helps us manage problems in a godly way. And so part of that ongoing work, part of what I can do is develop my character more and more to look like Jesus so that when provocations and troubles come, I will respond as Jesus would want me to respond. Because I got to tell you something, folks. If we're not winning lost people and we're losing a whole bunch of kids and we're tearing each other up, we're going to die. Someone's going to turn off the lights and lock the door for the last time. But even in the most hostile culture, when people come together and they go rescue lost people, and they take care of their kids, and they're united in that effort, even in a hostile culture like ours, churches can thrive. We are not subject to forces beyond our control, brothers and sisters. This is all about what we choose to do. May God help us on our watch to make the right choices. Because there is nothing, brothers and sisters, more important than this enterprise that all of us have undertaken together. I know that there's no front page news about what's going on at the Kleinwood Church in America today. But I got to tell you, brothers and sisters, in heaven, it is the most important thing. We are in the business of helping people go to heaven. And there just isn't anything else on the planet that's more important than that. And as a church family, we need to have a passionate concern with doing that work extraordinarily well. Nothing more important to be good at than the work of helping people going to heaven. Because, as we said about our kids, there isn't anything more important than going to heaven. So that's where we end today. Are you going there? Look at your life. If you know in your heart that things are not right between you and God, what we want to do is we want to sing this song to inspire and encourage you, and we want to urge you to make the choice maybe to be a Christian for the very first time. Or if you made that choice and you've kind of wandered away, to make the choice to come back to Him and rededicate yourself to Him. I do not know what your need is, but He does, and you do. And what we want you to do is let us know so that we can help you. So if that's your need, we're going to sing this song. We want you to make your way to the front right now while we stand, while we sing.